The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Money FM 89.3, best of your money. Money and Me on Your Money, only on Money FM 89.3.
Show for the investment community. I'm Michelle Martin. Good Friday morning, everyone. So you're not confident of investing on your own, but you do want to grow your retirement funds and you don't want to leave your money in your CPF account, which does earn you risk-free interest because you want to find better returns and you're confident it's out there somewhere. So what are your options? I'm going to find out what Endowus offers. Endowus offers allows investors to use their CPF or their SRS to invest. But what products would you as an investor have access to? And what sort of fees would you be looking at? We're going to speak with Samuel Reed, Chief Investment Officer at Endowus, to find out. And later on, we'll get his thoughts on the big story of the day. Yes, investment themes of for 2021, but also what does he think about the GameStop saga? First up, let's say good morning to Samuel. How are you doing, Samuel Reed?
Good morning, Michelle. Good to be back. Doing well.
That's good to hear. He's Chief Investment Officer at Endowus on the line with us. So what would people be investing in, Samuel, if they park their cash, their CPF or their SRS with Endowus?
Well, Endowus is unique, first of all, because we are the first and only digital advisor for CPF investing approved by the CPF. Mm-hmm. But we're a digital wealth platform and an open platform where you can actually manage all of your source of funds, not just CPF, but also your cash and your SRS. The way we give advice and help to individual investors, because we're a direct-to-consumer service provider, is we try to offer them the best globally diversified, low-cost investing options. And built around that core advice portfolio, we also provide short-term liquid solutions, like how to manage your cash and short-term liquidity. Also we give you options to build your personalized curated portfolios on our FundSmart platform. So we're really about trying to solve investing for the individual investor because it's very difficult to access advice, good advice, and to access great products and funds and to do it at low cost because costs are so high in investing.
Okay, there's some confusion out there I often hear about using funds in the ordinary account or the special account to invest with. People think of the CPF investment scheme. So would the people investing with Endowus have to sort of meet the same requirements for investing under the CPFIS, you know, be at least 18, have more than 20,000 in their OA, have more than 40,000 in their SA, for example?
Absolutely. We are an MAS-licensed financial advisor, but also we work within the CPF investment scheme program. So we are beholden to all the regulations and limits of the CPF investment scheme. However, we do provide exceptional solutions that were not previously available on CPFIS. We've worked with global, fund managers and local fund managers to provide previously exclusive to institutional funds and, bringing new solutions creatively. Like, for example, we brought in the Vanguard Passive Index Fund into CPF for the first time. We're working with Dimensional, who's a global leader in smart beta investment, and bringing them into CPF. We actually yesterday launched our ESG sustainable investing portfolios and funds that were previously not available here in Singapore for retail investors, many of them. So we're working really creatively to solve the problems and, giving access, better access and greater products to retail individual investors that were not previously available at exceptional cost.
Terrific. Well, can you tell us more about what you just launched yesterday, access to ESG, which seems to be such a hot theme for 2021?
It really is. Mm. And last year, it really proved its mettle in a very difficult year. The funds that we selected so far, and we've included three of the best global fund managers, the leaders in ESG sustainable investing, like Schroders and Mirova, JP Morgan Investment Management, Kimco, UOB Asset Management, who work with Robeco in the Netherlands, for example. These are wonderful products that previously only like institutional investors like GIC, for example, would invest in. We brought them into Singapore, made it a Sing dollar denominated product. And they are wonderful products that last year alone generated, you know, beat the market by more than 20%. And this is a long-term trend, as you suggested, and it's a growing area of the market where I think we can really do good and do well. So generate good returns, but also have a impact, positive impact on the world. And these products will provide you good returns, and we're getting access to it at unbelievable cost.
Fantastic to hear.
Investor.
Yeah. Can you elaborate a little on the fees that Endowus charges? How are you able to reduce the cost of investing, give us access to, you know, what previously maybe required us heading to a large asset manager to have access to? How can you reduce the costs of investing for the little guy and also make money?
Yeah, it's actually a strange thing, but you think that the fund managers who manage these money and actually generate the returns would take the biggest chunk of the fees, mm-hmm. but actually they don't. We don't either. The guys who make the biggest fees are actually the banks and the brokers and the fund platforms who get a kickback from the fund managers. And these are called trailer fees or retrocession fees. Mm. And they take multiple times what we take or even the fund manager takes oftentimes because they feel that they own the client. But clients are not owned by them and they have a choice. And they should do, most individual investors should do more research, look at platforms like Endowus, but there are other platforms and independent, you know, financial advisors who do not take this commission, which, you know, leads to misaligned advice or bad advice and really high cost. And this is the trend of the developed markets in globally, that actually they're banning commissions, these trailer fees, in selling financial products. And we should really work hard, even here in Singapore, to get rid of these things because it actually just leads to bad outcomes and poor returns. And so what we're doing is giving, you know, back all the rebates, the trailer fees that we receive, back to the client. So 100% trailer fee rebates. Or sometimes it's easier if we access the institutional share class. So guys like GIC would never pay these high fees because they're a big player in the market. So we work like GIC, we group buy for you and access really low cost fees or, you know, rebate the fees, as I mentioned earlier. And that results in lower fees for the client and we can survive with our fees intact.
Fantastic to hear. When people hear about investing, they think this is a long-term endeavor. They're serious. They value investors. They care about the fundamentals. But can you also help investors who have short-term goals?
Yes. I mean, short-term goals are necessary because, you know, we have different pockets of money. Sometimes we need, you know, some liquidity to manage for our monthly expenses. We want to set aside some money in a safe kind of investment, so that we can save up for a rainy day, like last year was an example where we needed to maybe dip into that bucket. And then there's a different bucket, which is for long-term retirement, maybe 20, 30 years down the line, where we need to really build wealth over the long term for that retirement. And then there's a piece that, you know, you can play around with, you know, in GameStop and, you know, every other trading platforms like Robinhood to maybe, you know, entertain yourself or think that you can generate or learn from the experience of investing yourself. So different pockets of money, different needs, and you should manage it in different ways. So it's called asset allocation and really allocating well in the right pockets in the right way and taking the appropriate risk for each bucket is really important. So what we provide is solutions for the first, which is short-term liquidity, rainy day fund, a safe investment. We help you prepare for retirement. What we don't do is the GameStop, Robinhood type trading stuff. So we really set up to help you succeed over the long term. But there are wonderful platforms that exist that help you, you know, play around with money or trade and make short-term gains. And there's many other players who do that really well.
Okay, so, understood. You don't deal with the GameStop type stocks, but let us into the way an investor thinks around the market news. So for the listener, GameStop is that loss-making brick-and-mortar video game retailer. Their shares have captivated retail investors, brutally punished hedge funds, and sparked a real conversation about what is fair and what is not in markets. So Samuel, we saw Robinhood and other retail brokerages limiting trading in GameStops and other companies like AMC, BlackBerry, Bed Bath & Beyond overnight. So Robinhood,
growing list.
Yes. So Robinhood allowed sales but prohibited new purchases. All this supposedly in the name of protecting investors. But institutional investors, the big guys we know, face no restrictions and they have access to markets, other access. So do you think Robinhood's prohibition on GameStop's purchases was fair? What is your opinion?
It's a very complicated matter, and overall, I'm a believer in markets. I'm a believer in fair play, and therefore, you know, limiting anybody's access to markets. If you're the gatekeeper, I don't think it should be allowed as a matter of principle. Having said that, the unique circumstances around which these things are developing. If you are an individual investor who have no experience of investing and you're putting your life savings into a stock that's going up, you know, 300-400% in a day and then falling by 30-50% a day, whether you are, you know, the right type of investor to be managing that risk and that volatility is a big question. And whether it's fair to help them and protect them, whether to allow them to lose all their money in their shirt is something that is, you know, it is a very qualitative and personal and subjective decision. So I think it's very difficult to say whether it was fair or not. What Robinhood has to answer to are regulators, because financial service companies are regulated. And, you know, the regulator is, I'm sure, going to look into this and see whether it was a fair decision. They must have made the decision based on certain business considerations. Maybe they had exposure that they weren't comfortable with because people were buying options and trading them like crazy as well. Mm-hmm. So it's not just a plain vanilla stock trade. They also have obligations because they have to, you know, complete a trade at certain prices. And when the price is so volatile, the trades actually, sometimes you lose out. Sometimes the volume is not there and you're not able to execute on time. Maybe they had problems with their technology or their platform. So those considerations, there are various considerations that we need to think about. But, you know, being fair or not fair and limiting people's access to markets, I'm fundamentally against that.
All right. Well, thank you so much for weighing in on that. Let's turn our attention now to macro news. And again, you know, it's always interesting for us to see how investors draw the dotted lines between what's happening in the macro news world and what they do with their money. So with the vaccine rollout, it's hard to pin down the precise impact of vaccine deployment so far. The MSCI All Country World Index up by 3.3%. Places where the vaccine rollouts globally are happening at the fastest pace, Israel and Dubai, up around 8% apiece for the benchmark equity indexes. What do you think are some key market trends that investors need to keep in mind with the vaccine rollout happening and uneven global recovery?
Yeah, I mean, great timing, because yesterday we held our Indowers Insights Outlook for 2021. Mm-hmm. We had guests from, you know, the CEO of SGX and CEO of multiple fund management companies join us. It's on the Indowers YouTube channel if anybody is willing to watch that long video.
But how long is it?
It was four sessions on market outlook, ESG, sustainable investing, retirement and CPF, and also personal finances. So it was very helpful. We had wonderful speakers and we had a great turnout, thousands of views. And I think it will be very helpful for individual investors. And, you know, Indowers is really about educating and improving financial literacy for retail investors here in Singapore. So we do a lot of work and provide a lot of content, both written and video. But yesterday, I think one of the key takeaways is that, you know, there is a divergence between the economy and the financial markets. Financial markets traditionally are always leading any economic activity. Last year, for example, the market fell before we could even shout recession, and the market was back before even the unemployment peaked. And economic growth, you know, fell before, you know, when the markets were already rising again. So the market's always forward-looking and pricing in the future outlook. And so I think right now there is a lot of optimism because it's supported by the Fed, low interest rate and liquidity, the fiscal backstop of governments sending out checks to support individuals, but also the progress that we're seeing on the vaccination front. I think the U.S. just hit 1 million vaccinations a day. I think they were targeting 1.5. So they're really accelerating the vaccination inoculation. And there's been a meaningful drop in new cases in the U.S., for example. So we are making progress. At the same time, there are concerns about, you know, different strains, whether, you know, enough vaccinations are available and make it broad enough that we actually create, you know, enough of a buffer so we can go back to normal life. So I think we're at that cusp of expectations being realized, but not fully there yet. So, you know, when there's hope, I think markets will continue to be positive. If there's any major disappointments, then obviously the markets will pull back. But so far, so good, I think, is where we are at.
So the FOMC, the Fed leaving interest rates unchanged and committing to $120 billion worth of bond purchases every month. What is your reading of the Fed's first meeting of the year? And what signal does it send to investors like you?
Yeah, I think a lot of focus was on the taper concerns. Mm-hmm. And by taper concerns, I'm talking about 2013-style taper where the Federal Reserve in the U.S. were buying back Treasury government bonds and government-backed mortgage securities. So they're buying back currently $80 billion of Treasuries and $40 billion of government-backed mortgage securities per month. So $120 billion, as you mentioned, Michelle, of money that's being poured into the market and the economy. To help alleviate the pain the economy is facing right now. In 2013, we had a similar scenario where they started reducing that buying per month, and it led to what's called now the famous taper tantrums. Mm-hmm. So now people are concerned that the economy coming back, vaccinations increasing, that the Fed may actually begin tapering their purchases in these government securities. And that was a bit of a concern in the market. But I think, you know, Powell and the Fed, I think, did enough to assuage some of these concerns. I think he specifically said that it's something that is not going to happen anytime soon, most likely in the second half. When it happens, it will concern the market because we will have a recovery. It's going to be an amazing recovery because the numbers look really solid. But we have to remember that the Fed has a dual mandate, unlike most central banks. So most central banks only have an inflation targeting policy, but Fed has a dual mandate of both inflation and also unemployment. Mm-hmm. Yes. So inflation needs to go up and unemployment needs to come back to a level where inflationary concerns increase. And it's very unlikely that we'll see this until probably late this year. And that depends also on the vaccinations and how COVID progresses. So there's a lot of uncertainty still. And so the Fed has done enough, I think, to remove a lot of concerns that people had coming into this year.
So when we look at earnings, we look at earnings for any sort of signal we can read of the health of corporations in the U.S., mm-hmm. Apple and Facebook failing to run on good numbers, suggesting perhaps that typical investors are still struggling to get back in the saddle and may become so inclined to put new money to work when there is clear evidence of vaccine rollouts accelerating in the next few weeks. But even without Apple or Facebook, tech as a whole seems to be recovering. What is your read of U.S. earnings reported this week? What stands out for you?
Yeah, we're right in the thick of earnings season. I think we've seen about one third of the companies report earnings so far. And in general, they've been actually surprising on the upside. Most of the big tech stocks and companies that you just mentioned actually surprised on the upside. I think there are two things. One is that maybe expectations were a bit low. Mm-hmm. So analysts kind of gamed it. And therefore, numbers were better than expected. As I said, the markets are forward looking and therefore they had actually priced in these improvements beforehand. So that's why maybe the market's not getting hugely excited. But the other thing is that actually all the news normally these days should be on earnings, but all the news has shifted to GameStop and Wall Street Bets and, you know, the retail hysteria that's going on in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And so people are, I think, distracted from the fundamental story in the markets as well. So I think it's a bit of both playing into this. But as you've said correctly, the tech stocks are actually doing relatively well and have actually outperformed recently. And the overall market year to date has done relatively well as well. So I think, you know, the market is in a strong position, generating good returns. earnings are backing it up and the recovery is shaping up. So, you know, unless there's a major issue or a shock to the system, things do look okay for now.
He's Samuel Ree from Endowus. Samuel, I want to turn to the UK. You would have thought British equities would be having a rough start to the year. I mean, just exited the European Union, unleashed a huge amount of red tape, particularly for companies that export to the continent. And then, of course, there's COVID-19 and that new spread of virus strain that's spreading fast in the UK, overwhelming so many hospitals. But the FTSE 100 outperforming the Dow and the S&P 500 up nearly 4% since the beginning of the year. So why are you surprised at all by how well British equities are doing?
It's not a major focus because it's such a small market now. British equities is, you know, an afterthought in many people's portfolio in their global asset allocation because it's such a small allocation. I think most people are very focused on the US, emerging markets, making those big bets and getting it right. I think this year everyone's been talking about Asia. So British equities, I think, you know, is a small part in the big picture of things. Having said that, they are doing well, as you said. But so are many, many markets out there. And I think one thing that I've noticed is coming into this year is people are looking for new ideas. And people are looking at the laggards, Singapore Stock Exchange being one of them, STI index being one of them, for example. So we have had a few markets which pop because they're seen as values or seen as laggards. And I think that's not surprising. It's typical rotation in a bull cycle or an upward moving market. And so the British equities outperformance is not surprising really at all.
Okay, so what is popular? Go ahead.
Go ahead.
What is becoming popular with value investors now who are looking at the laggards?
Yeah, value investing has had a very rough period. So we've had 10 years, a decade of underperformance. And last year it culminated in the worst year for value stocks. You know, value has been underperforming. But it's interesting that last year, towards the end of the year, and coming into this year, value actually started outperforming. So there is a lot of talk that value may be outperforming again. And it's, you know, funny because that decade was preceded by the best decade for value in terms of performance. So if you look at the long-term performance of value, it's actually done well. It's just that the recent years have been quite bad. But it's typical of markets that you move from one extreme to the other extreme. And so long term, you know, it is understandable that value may come back because it's been a laggard. People now with, you know, tech stocks and things, you know, being really expensive are looking for new ideas. That's why GameStop's coming up, you know, AMC. These are value stocks. These are stocks that have been laggards, underperformers, highly shorted stocks. So I think it's natural for the market to try to be efficient, look for outliers, look for laggards, look for value. And, you know, some of these value stocks will come back. Especially if the fundamentals back it up.
Okay, some would argue there is no value in GameStop. It's a brick and mortar video.
If they manage to turn it around with new money, then yeah, maybe. But yes, I understand where you're coming from.
Where do you see huge untapped market opportunity in Asia?
I think Asia in general is placed quite well. We have, you know, weathered the COVID situation much better than any other region globally. We have very strong manufacturing base across the region. We have a growing consumer, middle class, you know, wealth building up. So Asia across the region within an EM context and within a global context looks very well positioned. We're seeing good earnings. We're seeing, you know, manufacturing activities and economic activities hold up better than other places on the way down and actually doing well on the way back up. And as a result, the markets have done well, but I think, you know, compared to developed markets, compared to tech stocks in the U.S., many other markets, even British equities, I think Asia doesn't look, you know, any more expensive and, you know, in many ways look much more attractive. So I think you need to have allocation globally in a diversified manner, but having a slight overweight in Asia is not a bad thing at this point in time. But, you know, Endowus is all about trying to really build wealth over the long term. So we do want to emphasize that it's time in the market not trying to time the market, that is important.
Absolutely. So in terms of your supplementary retirement portfolio schemes, for example, and geographic allocation, would it be fair to say it's US, China, Singapore in that order, or what order are we looking at?
I think in any globally diversified portfolio, U.S. takes a big chunk of the market.
Mm-hmm.
But it depends how you index it. If you look at geographic allocation,
mm-hmm.
If you do a GDP-based allocation, Asia would, result in a meaningfully larger overweight position. So we do a blend of, indexing across asset classes and geographies. So we are strategically passive in our allocation. But it does result in Asia being a slight overweight versus other markets. And we're okay with that because I think Asia looks pretty well positioned.
Always great speaking with you. Thank you so much for sharing your insights with us, Samuel.
Thank you, Michelle. Great to be here.
He's Samuel Reed, Chief Investment Officer at Endowus, with us here on Money and Me.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.